David Johnson apparently isn't the only one. Is this Kelly? Really? Kelly Oubre getting criticism from fantasy players about his performance against the Lakers the other night.
Man, my Twitter was going crazy last night, man. People were bashing me. I guess I'm on people's fantasy now. You know what I'm saying? So, hey, I appreciate y'all picking me, but hey, I can't. I'm a human being, bro. You can't bank on me to help you get money. You know what I'm saying? Because I got to eat, too. You got to eat. It's good, you know.
But it just shows the impact that or the role that you're expected to have.
Yeah, but all in all, man, I got y'all, man. Keep betting on me. You know what I'm saying? Just like I bet on myself, man, we're going to be all right.
Look, if Matthew Berry starts railing on Yanni ESPN, that's when you know you've made it if you're Kelly Oubre, right? That's when you know from a fantasy standpoint that you've absolutely hit the mother load. If you got Matthew Berry going on a 45-second rant about how you only had 1 point the other day against the LA Lakers, then you have arrived. But Oubre, and we noted this yesterday off the Lakers game, did not have a good game at all against the Lakers, was not on the floor in crunch time against the LA Lakers. Our own Kellen Olsen, in his story about the wing players and Oubre, noted that after Tuesday night's game, Oubre walked back into the locker room after a lot of the players had already left. He was on the practice floor working on his game because it was arguably the worst performance Kelly Oubre has had as a member of the Phoenix Suns, but it also kind of highlights, and it's so funny that we're here at this point with the Suns. They get ready to take on the Hawks tonight. It used to be we had so many wing players around here, we didn't know what to do with all of them, right?
Yes.
We had them playing all out of position. Everybody was more wing players than a Buffalo Wild Wings, okay? Now you've got these three, and these three all have a different skill set. And these three all do something very well. And Monty acknowledges that he's still trying to find the right balance between which one do I have on the floor in which situation, which two do I have on the floor at the same time. Because Monty basically yesterday said it's kind of a work in progress. It's been okay so far, the production that we've gotten out of our wing players and the blending of the wing players, because they're all so different out there.
It is. They had four wing players and they had no power forwards and they had no point guard. And their four wing players were, you know, different in many ways. And they had to get the right mix. And me and you said this when we were on the Fox Sports Arizona show with Tom and Tom the other day. We think that the turnaround for the Phoenix Suns, we both agreed that it started with the addition of Kelly Oubre. Because that gave you a dynamic wing player who could score, who could D guys up, who could shoot the three. He was young.
High energy guy.
I think it started there. You know, people say Monty Williams and other players. Maybe when they got the point guard in Ricky Rubio, where things changed, where things turned. Some people might say the firing of Ryan McDonough is where it started. And when they turned things over to James Jones. I think the beginning really was when they got Kelly Oubre. It was a steal of a trade. It was a fantastic trade when they got Kelly Oubre. And he and Mikal Bridges could be the wing players here for a number of years. They're different. Kelly's more of a scorer. I think Mikal can score. Mikal is a good defensive player, comes up with steals. They're both very, very long. And it's a good mix. You can interchange them. Kelly's not going right, you got Mikal. Mikal's not going right, you got Kelly. But last year, they were playing a lot of those wing guys at power forward. They were playing a lot of those wing guys out of position.
TJ Warren is a power forward. That's out of position. And you're, of course, not even talking about Cam Johnson, who was the wing player who got the bulk of the playing time
right
in the fourth quarter against the LA Lakers. Now it's funny looking at like the net ratings of the three players, whatever stock you want to put into that, he's got the lowest, Cam Johnson does, and yet he's the one who's seen his playing time increase the most over the last three games. I think he's 19 and 27 minutes over the last three games. He's getting quite a bit of playing time. We've already seen Javon Carter basically benched so that Cam Johnson can get more playing time. Monty himself acknowledged on his multi-wing lineups, he said, quote, "It's okay. I wouldn't say it's been great." He's still trying to figure out which, if he's got two on the floor at the same time, which two should he have on the floor? And if it's crunch time of a certain game, what does he want out there? Does he want Cam Johnson shooting? Does he want Mikal Bridges' defense? I remember Bridges being on the floor almost the entire fourth quarter against Philly, right? He played a valuable role there. Does he want Kelly's energy and kind of all-around game? He can do a little bit of everything very well. And in the middle of all of this is something they haven't had in forever and a day. and that's a power forward.
Right.
Which changes the Dario Saric, and he gets so lost in everything that has happened this year for the Phoenix Suns. I mean, if you start
and
naming
his best game offensively against the Lakers.
Right, but if you start naming the five things you're the most excited about the Phoenix Suns.
He's not one of them.
Or the five reasons why the Suns are 6-4. Monty,
Rubio,
Devin, Rubio,
Baines.
What else? Okay, so those are the four. What would I name as my fifth?
Okay, Monty.
Yep.
Baines, Rubio,
Booker.
Okay, Books. You somewhere in that 5-6 range. I mean, you're not more excited about Cam Johnson?
At the beginning of the season, I was more excited about Frank Kaminsky because Frank Kaminsky was scoring a ton at the beginning. Remember at the beginning of the first 2 weeks of the season, Frank Kaminsky was pouring in all sorts of points. He was a revelation. He has cooled since, although he had a really good game against the Lakers. I don't know who I would have as my fifth. I'm not sure. What's the fifth thing about the Phoenix Suns that has me the most excited this year? That is the reason why they're as good as they are. I don't think I'd put Cam Johnson there. Tyler Johnson?
No, because he's not here for the
I don't know.
Ball.
I don't know what I'd put there.
Look, Saric is...
Maybe Saric. Maybe I would put Saric at number five.
Yeah, you know, they moved down in the draft, and they got a power forward. Now, you know, you could look. I mean, you could go look at how, you know, Kobe White is doing, some of the players they could have drafted in that area. But they, you know, they needed to get a power forward. So they moved down. They didn't want... Here's the thing on Saric. Teams have given up on him because they don't want to pay him. And the Suns are going to have to make up their mind on that, too. The Suns are going to have to decide whether... You know, Philly got rid of him. They didn't want to pay him. Minnesota got rid of him. They didn't want to pay him. The Suns, after this year, you got to decide, do you want to pay the guy or not? You know, he's good, and he's 25 years old. So he totally fits into the... He totally fits into the time frame of what they want to do. You know, he's a 6'10 power forward. He's good, not great. He's serviceable. He doesn't need the ball. He could shoot the three a little bit. He's a wide body, but he doesn't run the floor very well. I think he's going to want a lot of money. I think he's going to want like $14, $15 million a year. For now, this was something that they needed. And what going forward, do you draft a guy? Do you sign somebody else? Do you just keep him? If they have a really good season and they have good chemistry, they might decide, you know what? Keep Baines, keep Saric. Let's just keep this role going with what we have. We're building something here. You could do that. Baines could be fine for another couple of years as a backup center. He's 32. Saric is 25. He doesn't demand the ball. He doesn't complain. He'll shoot the three when he's open. He'll go in there and bang. He's a physical player. He's a physical player. So you might decide that you want Saric for the long haul.
In the middle of all of this, there's Cam Johnson and Devin Booker after Tuesday's game.
Just to fight, you know, to be thrown in the fire like that. In a big-time matchup, a high-intensity game. I don't think he's been in that late for us thus far. And, you know, to coach, throw him in the fire, and him show no back down. You know, he had assignment. He was guarding LeBron for a little bit. At the same time, like you said, he was hitting big shots. So, you know, it shows his character. I mean, he's ready to play at all times. And when he gets his chance, you know, he comes to perform.
We'll see what the rotation looks like tonight. I expect Kelly Oubre to have a heck of a bounce back game tonight. I think he's Kelly Oubre is going to be fine. And Cam Johnson still needs to show me more. He can shoot. He can shoot.
What else do you want to see?
Defensive improvement. He's a little bit of a liability out there. Wouldn't you agree? Cam Johnson's a little bit of a liability defensively out there. I know he tries. He's trying, but he's got a lot of work to do.
I remember something that James Jones said, you know, when we talked about Frank Kaminsky. Not worried about what guys can't do, I'm worried about what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're going to do is they're going to work with what the guys can do. What Cam Johnson can do is he can catch and shoot.
He can, but you saw it, and so did I. Mm-hmm. Kyle Kuzma had a lot of his success in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Two nights ago.
Yeah.
Against Cam Johnson.
Yep.
And sometimes what you can't do is important.
I know.
What you can't do matters. And what he couldn't do that night was guard Kyle Kuzma.
And that will be a work in progress for years.
Listen each day this week, 7:30 in the morning, 12:30 in the afternoon, and be listening at 4:30 this afternoon. We're going to call out a name and a chance to spin the wheel of sports trips. Every qualifier wins an Amazon Echo, plus a shot of trips to the Card Seahawks, Suns Lakers, ASU hoops at the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas or the D-backs at the Cubs in April. Text the word SPIN to 620-620 right now. That's SPIN to 620-620. It is the Arizona Sports Wheel of Sports Trips. Be listening at 4:30 today. It's been the one side of the ball that has certainly been the Achilles heel. It has held the Cardinals back the last few weeks. Vance Joseph knows this. The question is, what is he going to do about it? We'll try to answer that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Last time these two teams met, it was arguably Patrick Peterson's worst game as an Arizona Cardinal. I bet statistically we could look it up, but it was probably his worst game as a member of the Arizona Cardinals. Now it's a rematch, and we don't know if Emmanuel Sanders is going to play or not. I believe it's a rib injury he's dealing with, and apparently, according to the reports, he's in a lot of pain. So maybe we won't even see Emmanuel Sanders. But Patrick Peterson today met with reporters at Cardinals headquarters, and he was asked, do you seek revenge against Sanders this Sunday in the rematch against the 49ers?
I won't say look forward into getting back at him. He had a great game. You know, I want to prepare this week so I can have a great game. It's not any revenge or, you know, going out of my way to make, obviously I want to put together a good performance to put our team in the best position as possible to win. Because those are the type of assignments that I track each and every week. So Emmanuel's been doing, you know, great things since he's been in the league. In my mind, I thought, you know, very, very sharp route runner, very quick, just a very smooth all-around receiver. And he's been doing it at a high level for a very long time when he's healthy and on the field.
He also added, when it comes to Sunday, quote, I'm definitely playing. I've missed enough games, close quote. That was Patrick Peterson today.
Yeah, listen, this is Patrick Peterson's situation in these last two games has been really difficult to deal with. Because when he came back, not being traded, might be extending Patrick Peterson. Then he comes out and he plays like he did against the 49ers with Emmanuel Sanders. And I think you said even this last game against Tampa Bay, he had the lowest rating of any defensive player on the Pro Football Focus. So you see Patrick Peterson, you're like, now the question is, do you want to extend him? Do you want to keep him? Should they have traded him? Can he get back to being what he was? There was a thought after the San Francisco game he's a little rusty. He's just a little rusty. Okay, well then the Tampa Bay came, and I didn't think he played bad against Tampa Bay. I thought he was okay. The numbers didn't show that he was okay, but he played poorly against San Francisco for sure. You want to see, can Patrick Peterson get back to the level of being an eight-time Pro Bowl player?
Yeah.
Is that possible? Can he do that?
And I don't know. I need to see more. I mean, we've seen him for, what, three games so far this year, right? I mean, he missed the first six. He's played the last three. He was great against the Giants. He was really bad against San Francisco. And I don't think he was as bad as Pro Football Focus said. And it wasn't all defensive players, just all defensive players on the Cardinals that he was. But I know when you came in here on Monday and you weren't getting any disagreement from me, the Cardinals defense was drawing your wrath. On Monday,
oh, yes.
And Vance Joseph today was asked, how do you think this defense is performing?
Numbers-wise, not very good in some areas. Just watching every week, we've done some really good things. You know, we played good against some really good offenses. Even last week, we had some really good moments. I think the issue last week, you know, and throughout the season was big plays. You know, we played good defense in spurts, but every scoring drive, it was one big play. You know, so we have to obviously coach better and have more focus on each play and do our jobs more consistently. You know, if you don't do that, obviously, in this league, it can lead to big plays and scores.
First off, he needs better players. Okay, and Vance Joseph is a guy, a lot of people have had their wrath on Vance Joseph because the defense has been so bad. And it's tough for me to watch this defense because I've said I hate this defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just the case. They need better players. They don't have enough good players on that defense. We could sit there and you could talk about being consistent and you're giving up this play. This is going to be the problem all year long. The Cardinals are going to finish this season as one of the worst defensive units in the NFL. Nothing's going to change that. There's no magic pill. There's no magic player. Nothing's going to... They don't have a good defense. Now, part of the reason, Robert Alford's not here. Kim Dicci flamed out. Darius Filon had to get cut for obvious reasons. Zach Allen
has barely played.
Yeah, hasn't played. There are reasons as to what... This defense would have been better if things worked out according to plan. The way they had planned it, this defense would have been better. But things happened, and now this defense is no good. he's got to say this. He's got to keep trying to make these guys better. I don't know that anything changes. They're going to have to win with their offense. I doubt that this defense is going to win them football games.
Yeah, the offense has been extraordinary. I mean, the numbers, the metrics, the stats, everything you want, the eye test. Yeah, is it consistent? Is it what we want it to be all the time? No, but it has been such a drastic improvement from a year ago. Defensively, they've got a lot of work to do. To the point where Vance was actually asked about the off-field issues this summer and whether they talk about the Filon and the Alford injury and the Peterson suspension, did those hurt the defense?
I think honestly, when you go into the year, you know, without your main guy that you're counting on, it hurts you. But in my opinion, if we simply play with more consistency, we can be good now. You know, so you know, I don't see it being an issue. You know, as far as, you know, what we are now, we have good enough players to win.
But again, he's got to say that.
He has to.
He's
yeah.
got to say that.
Can't say we don't have good enough players. Can't say I need more players. But that's what they do. They need more players.
Mm-hmm.
They need better players. They have to change this quite a bit. Now, other players have to get better. Look, Byron Murphy's given up 6 touchdowns this year. He's going to be a good player. He's given up 6 touchdowns this year.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to be good. He's a rookie. He was thrown into the fire right away. He's got you know, this Jalen Thompson, right? I mean, they got him in the 5th round. He probably would have been a much higher pick next year. But they got him with the 5th round supplemental pick. So I think he's going to be good, but he's been thrust right into it right away. He's had to play so much. So some of these guys are probably not benefiting from learning behind somebody because they got thrown right into it. They'll be better for it in the long run. But for this year, man, this year will be a blur to some of these guys when the season's over. It'll be a blur.
Sure. Sure, that's what I was reading an article about Christian Kirk on azcardinals.com and how he's, even though he's the youngest wide receiver in the room, and if you can believe it, he is. He and Andy Isabella share a birthday. Christian Kirk's the youngest wide receiver in the room. But because he's been here a year, he can help guys like Keyshawn Johnson and Andy Isabella learn what it means to be a wide receiver in this league. Look, I was just looking up the Cardinals draft from a year ago. Cardinals draft... Here's their draft from 1 year ago. You tell me what stands out to you about this draft.
Okay.
Murray, Murphy, Isabella, Zach Allen, Hakeem Butler, Deontay Thompson, Keyshawn Johnson, Lamont Gilliard, Joshua Miles, Michael Dogby, Caleb Wilson. 1, 2, go ahead with 3.
I'm trying to think. I mean,
6, 7 offensive players.
Okay. That's where you were going.
This year's draft? I mean, you were showing me a mock draft the other day.
Yes.
Cardinals picking number 10.
Had a cornerback. They picked a corner.
This year's draft is going to be as heavy defensively as last year's draft was offensively. Because you have to.
Now, you might go get a wide receiver in free agency.
You might.
You could even draft one. But if you're bringing back Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds and David Johnson, you're set at running back. You're set at quarterback. How about your offensive line? I think you always look to add an offensive lineman if you can, but you could also do that in free agency. It's the defensive side of the ball where they're probably going to have a really, really strong emphasis on that defensive side of the ball. So, even with Kliff being an offensive coach, you're going to see them really address that defense. I think Vance comes back next year. I think they got to give him more tools to work with and better players and then see what he could do. Vance is highly regarded as a defensive coordinator. I know the guys in Denver don't like him a whole lot, but he is highly regarded. And I think if you give him the right players, he'll have a better chance to make the system.
Said, look, we don't get paid to almost win games around here.
You can say we're close, but you get paid to win, you know, not to be close and to almost win games, you know. So we have to rectify that and play better in those spots. You know, it's been a bunch of games where we hadn't finished well. You know, that's disappointing, but we have to get better.
The shame of it is their defense is really holding them back from being even better than we thought. Their defense is holding them back from being a team. I don't know if they are a playoff team, if they've got a better defense, but they're closer to a play. What does it take to be a playoff team in the NFC? 5-4
right now.
Yeah,
you're
right,
5-4. You're in the thick of things.
If you're 5-4.
Sure.
You're just on the outside looking in of a playoff spot. Are they a few defensive players away from being closer to that 5-4 mark than their 3-6-1 mark? I think so. I think they are
probably because look. They've been in every single, like, the Tampa Bay game they should have won.
Sure.
Okay, and you can make an argument they could have won that San Francisco game. Maybe if they would have won the Detroit game, right? It's very simple. You could find another win or two for them. You could get them to 4 wins. You can get them to 5 wins. Some people could probably get them to 6 wins. Detroit, San Francisco, Tampa Bay. But that doesn't all work out like that. I mean, this is a young team. They're learning. The coach is learning. Hopefully they'll be better for it next year. But clearly, and I could even say, man, if some of these guys had worked out that they had planned on working out, they would have won a few more games.
Trying to find a competitive edge, it's always been a part of baseball's written and unwritten rules. One team reportedly has taken that edge to a whole new level. The question is, what is baseball going to do about it? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. I looked at Jordan quizzically, bang a gong, get an. Oh, I get it.
There's no songs about banging trash cans.
Oddly enough, no, that's not.
Didn't Oscar the Grouch bang trash cans?
Well, he lived in a trash can.
Oh, he lived in it. Had to bang it at some point.
At some point, I would imagine. When you're accused of setting up a camera in center field and then banging on a trash can to alert the hitter whether an off-speed pitch is coming or not, there really is not a great matching song for that. So the best Jordan could come up with is Bang a Gong.
Pretty specific situation.
Yeah, it's a very fine-tuned kind of moment. There isn't a whole lot that applies to that. So I credit you for finding something. This Astros story has just absolutely taken off.
It really has.
To the point where Major League Baseball is now planning on talking to not just current Astros personnel, but former Astros personnel. And that includes the Boston Red Sox manager Alex Cora, who was the bench coach. That includes Mets manager Carlos Beltran, who was in his final year as a player for the 2017 Astros that are accused of Mike Fiers, the former Astros pitcher, was the one who ratted out the entire organization. And what his motivation was for it, I have absolutely no idea.
That's a great question.
I don't know what...
What was his motivation? How's he going to be viewed at in baseball?
Well, I can tell you how he's going to be viewed at by the Astros, rest of the baseball might be glad that he ratted them out. Because here's the thing, and I'm going to let Jeff Passan make this point and not me, but I think it's a good point to make. Sign stealing happens all the time, but using technology to steal signs, that's the no-no.
Sign stealing is something that has been around in baseball forever.
Sure.
But there is a line that you do not cross. And that line that you do not cross is using technology to go out and do it.
Remember there was that incident, I can't remember with what team, but the Apple Watches, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they were investigating whether they had crossed the line. It was Boston Red Sox. Boston Red Sox using Apple Watches.
Yep.
As Mike Fiers has alleged, the Houston Astros allegedly set up a camera in center field. And then as long as time permitted and as long as the Houston Astros could decipher the fingers being put down, they would bang a trash can to alert their hitters whether the pitch was going to be an off-speed pitch or not. Now, they didn't go into any more detail than that. It wasn't like bang it once for a fastball, bang it twice for a curveball, bang it three times for a changeup, bang it a fourth for a slider. It wasn't anything like that, but it was, hey, off-speed's coming, bang, bang the gong. And now baseball...
And that's how Jose Altuve knew that Aroldis Chapman was throwing a slider. Do you remember the look on Aroldis Chapman's face when Jose Altuve hit that ball out of the ballpark? Like, are you kidding me? I threw the ball 102 miles an hour. Nobody looks slider on me. Ever.
Yeah.
How are you looking slider there?
But that was...
How?
That was this year.
That was this year.
And so that's where the investigation starts to expand a little bit. What were the Houston Astros doing? How long were they doing it? Who knew about it?
How many people are connected to it, right?
Up the food chain did it go? And most importantly, what exactly does punishment look like for the Astros? And
they'll come down hard, I think.
Here's Jeff Passan on that topic as well.
Well, the penalties are up to a $2 million fine. They can take draft picks away, but this is not like the NCAA where they're going to be vacating championships. MLB's stuck between a rock and a hard place at this point because it does seem so clear what actually happened there. And the fact that the Astros won the championship in 2017, in 2018 got to the American League Championship Series, and in 2018, 2019, got to within a game of another championship, shows just how hot an issue this is and just how important it is for MLB to actually get it right.
So the Dodgers can't claim the 2017 championship now?
No, they cannot.
So the Dodgers aren't going to hoist a banner saying 2017 World Series champs?
No.
The Astros cheated. Dodger fans are going to go ballistic right now. They're going to go ballistic.
They should.
They're going to feel like they got robbed.
You remember Central Florida when they went undefeated? They put up a college football national title.
Yeah, that's right.
Dodgers
yeah.
should put up one.
Hey, listen, I hate the Dodgers. I almost feel bad for them right now. Like
I can't go that far.
Like if the Astros were cheating, if they were blatantly cheating.
I can't feel bad for the Dodgers.
We hate the Dodgers.
I can't feel bad for the Dodgers.
But okay, but if you feel bad for any team they've played, if you feel bad for the Yankees, then you got to feel bad for the Dodgers.
I can't feel bad.
You either feel bad for the teams they played or you don't. You can't pick and choose.
No, I am picking and choosing. I can't feel bad for the Dodgers.
I am
picking and choosing, and I refuse to feel bad for the Dodgers about anything. I refuse. I can't.
2017 World Series champs. The LA Dodgers.
Yeah, look.
Clayton Kershaw gets his ring.
There is no punishment that baseball can put on the Houston Astros
that
won't be something the Houston Astros in a room with the door closed, whoever was involved in this conspiracy, if that's what you want to call it, they'll all to a man tell you it was worth it. What did we lose? A couple draft picks, couple $1 million. Yeah, but we were the World Series champs in 2017. We were the World Series runner-up in 2019.
Like the Black Sox
and we won 106 games or whatever it was in 2018. We'll take it. We'll take it.
I'm not an asterisk guy, but you know people are going to want to put an asterisk next to it.
Sure.
They cheated to win.
Sure.
They cheated. They used technology to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
And a player ratted. Wouldn't you think that a player would say something? Hey, I play for the Astros. Now you just traded me to the Tigers. I'm going to play against you. Yes, I'm going to tell my new team what you do. Yes. Then you're not paying me anymore. Like, unless you keep everybody until they retire, if somebody goes to another team, are you not afraid of that?
Okay.
Are you not afraid that somebody's going to go to another team and say, hey, by the way, they cheat, and I'm trying to beat them now?
And that's
get this.
And that's a good point. You can tell your teammates who crossed the line and leaked it to somebody in our line of work, right? Because I agree with you. Mike Fiers has almost a responsibility to share with his new teammates. Hey, by the way, every time we play with Houston, you got to understand.
I would if I was him.
But somewhere that message went from an internal one in a baseball clubhouse and it got out to the media.
Yeah.
And that's where, look, good. I'm glad it got out. I'm glad it got out because Houston, the cliche, Houston, we have a problem. Houston's had a problem this year. All right. Whether it's the embarrassing clubhouse incident during the playoffs with a female reporter.
And they fired that, was it assistant GM?
Assistant GM.
They fired him, rightfully so. But initially,
boy, they tried to discredit the reporter.
Which is
terrible.
They
tried to defend his actions.
Terrible.
It was deplorable the way they handled
it. AJ Hinch did not.
Nope.
AJ Hinch.
Credit AJ for how he handled it.
Yes.
How they handled it. I'll be honest with you, kind of made me want to see them lose that World Series. Kind of made me root against them in that World Series. Like, man, you can't go around doing that. You can't go around berating female reporters in your clubhouse because you signed a domestic violence guy and you thought you were justified in doing so because you got to the World Series. What a crappy thing to do. What sort of organizational advocacy, pardon my phrasing there, is that? That you have somebody in your organization who's willing to do that.
That's a crappy thing to do. Didn't they steal from the Cardinals?
No, it was the other way around.
The Cardinals stole from them.
Cardinals stole from them.
Okay.
You look at the past punishments, and it's hard to believe that it's going to be anything hardcore. You mentioned the Cardinals. Let's see what happened to them. They were fined $2 million. They gave up their top two draft picks. I mean, that's not insignificant, but it's not that big of a deal. Now, here's something. The Cardinals scouting director, Chris Correa, was banned for life from the sport and went to prison stealing that information out of the Astros database. Former Braves GM John Capello was banned 10 months later for lying about circumventing international signing rules. So, I mean, there are things baseball can do.
I just had this sent to me from Ryan Van. This is what Fire said. I want the game to be cleaned up a little bit because there are guys who are losing their jobs because they go in there not knowing. Young guys getting hit around in the first couple of innings starting a game, and then they get sent down. It's BS on that end. It's ruining jobs for younger guys. The guys who know are most prepared, but most people don't. That's why I told my team. We had a lot of young guys with Detroit trying to make a name and establish themselves. I wanted to help them out and say, hey, this stuff really does go on. Just be prepared. So that's why. So it was him. So maybe it was him that just like leaked the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he just leaked it and just wanted it out there that the Astros are cheating. Clean it up now because he's tired of seeing guys. Young guy comes up and he gets hit hard. Listen, it was obvious in the playoffs watching the Astros chatting with each other, like telling everybody what they're seeing. See, if and that's the thing that kind of threw me off with the whole garbage can thing. If they were able to tip the pitches that way and the – like, if they just needed the garbage can, why did they need the other stuff?
Right. And some of it, too. Strasburg, what he was doing with his glove, that was obvious. Right?
Yes.
I mean, even his people picked up
yes.
on that. Right.
And that's fine if you're picking something up that way, but you can't use the electronics
yeah.
to pick something up.
He is 16-3 as a starting quarterback in the NFL, and he's getting ready to face the Cardinals on Sunday, and yet an argument is being made that Jimmy Garoppolo might be holding back the 49ers from being elite. What is that argument, and does it hold water? We'll find out next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Our buddy, our colleague, Mike Jarecki. It's like he knew we were going to talk about this because he tweeted something out 6 minutes ago.
Don't tell Mike Jarecki. Tell me.
Okay, Bob Ferguson. You know you've been around a while when you can throw a Bob Ferguson.
If you know that one.
If you know that one, then you've been following the Arizona Cardinals and Arizona sports media a long time. If you know the Bob Ferguson, Mike Jarecki, don't tell Mike Jarecki,
tell me. Yeah, come in and tell me.
So Mike Jarecki tweeted out 6 minutes ago, watching Monday Night Football, 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo was 12 of 26 in the second half with one interception without Emmanuel Sanders and George Kittle. In the two previous games, Garoppolo with Sanders and Kittle was completing 77% of his passes with 6 touchdowns and 1 interception. Now, the reason I bring that up, CBS Sports did, you know, another one of those, hey, let's rank the quarterbacks. Here's the best quarterback in the league. Here's the 10th best quarterback in the league. And before they got to the rankings, they spent like 2,000 words and a whole bunch of video clips asking the question, is Jimmy Garoppolo a liability for the San Francisco 49ers?
Now, no.
Okay.
No.
And how they defined it was, they're not saying he's a bad quarterback. They're not saying he's a poor quarterback. They're just wondering if he's a good enough quarterback that in those moments, in those games, when you need Jimmy Garoppolo to be great, to win you a game, when you need Jimmy Garoppolo to be Russell Wilson, okay?
Okay.
Does he have that in him? He's 16-3. It's almost impossible to argue with the win-loss record. And I would agree with you if you're going to base your argument off of that. But to look at his numbers within those 19 games, they're decent. They're decent stats. But is he the kind of quarterback that, let's say, in January,
okay,
you got to go to Lambeau and you got to beat the Green Bay Packers? Is Jimmy Garoppolo? Russell Wilson's good enough to do that. He's absolutely good. Drew Brees is good enough to do that, although I would bet against the Saints in that situation since they're an indoor team. Is Jimmy Garoppolo good enough to do that?
Was Nick Foles good enough to beat the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl?
Nick Foles is
he
is a rare outlier in that circumstance.
Joe
Flacco would also be a rare outlier in that circumstance.
I mean, Jim McMahon won a Super Bowl. Mark Rippon won a Super Bowl.
That was a long time ago, Gamble. That was a long time ago.
You mentioned Flacco.
Flacco was 8 years ago. You're talking about guys 30 years ago. I'm talking about an 8-year guy.
Nick Foles wasn't that long ago.
I give you Nick Foles.
Brad Johnson. Trent Dilfer?
Yeah, again, see, now you're starting to go back 20 years, right? When the game was a little bit different.
I'll follow you on this. I think Jimmy Garoppolo can win. I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback.
I didn't say he was a bad quarterback.
You're asking, can he go win in Lambeau?
Yeah, it's not okay. A black or white thing. Is he good enough to win you a game by himself?
So if Jimmy Garoppolo goes to Lambeau Field and has to win them a game this year in January, no, they're not going to win. They'll lose to the Packers. Okay, but next year maybe they get home field advantage and the Packers have to go there and they can win. So it's like, it's a tough argument to make because they're not going to have to go to Lambeau every single year that Jimmy Garoppolo's in the league.
No.
But if you said this year, Jimmy Garoppolo's got to go to Lambeau in January, there's not that many quarterbacks I would take that I think could win that game. Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees, I'm done. Dak Prescott's not winning a game in Lambeau. I'm
trying to think if I'd add anybody else.
Kirk Cousins isn't winning a game in Lambeau in January.
Kirk Cousins isn't walking through that door.
Carson Wentz, I'm not taking to win a game.
No, I think you're right. I don't think I'd really add anybody else on that list.
Like the argument, like the question is it's a fair question. Do I think Jimmy Garoppolo can go to Lambeau Field in January and win a football game? No. Do I think that every year he's going to have to go to Lambeau and win a football game? No. I think there might be a year where he has to go to Dallas to win a game. Or maybe he's got to go to L.A. to win a game. Or maybe he's got to go to Arizona to win a game. Like, it's the Lambeau thing is for 1 year. No, I wouldn't say he could win a game in Lambeau, but there's not many quarterbacks I would say could win a game in January when it's minus 10 degrees out.
Okay, that's fair.
But there will be years when if the 49ers continue to be good, where they may get home field advantage.
I guess for me, what brings it all home to me is that what I do agree with is that the 49ers very rarely win games because of Jimmy Garoppolo. They're winning games because of that rush offense. They're winning games because of that pass rush on defense. They're winning games because of one of the best defenses in the NFL. Other than the Cardinals game, which I do think San Francisco won because of Jimmy Garoppolo. He was really good against them that night. I don't know if the 49ers are winning a ton of games because of Jimmy Garoppolo. I just don't know if he's... Now, he might get there one of these days. I don't think he's there right now. And I do think in January, yes, there are the Nick Foles of the world. Yes, there are the Brad Johnsons of the world and the Joe Flaccos of the world. I'll give you that. But by and large, you look at the last 15 Super Bowl champions, most of them, not all, most of them were helmed by a truly great quarterback. I don't know if Jimmy G's there yet. Not sure he is.
So the question really becomes is, do you have to be a great quarterback to win a Super Bowl these days? If you have a great defense, which the 49ers do,
mm-hmm.
and you have a good running game, and your quarterback can manage a game well and not turn the ball over, can you win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, you can.
I think you can.
You can.
So I do think that Jimmy Garoppolo can win. I don't think he's one of the 5 or 10 best quarterbacks. I'll take 10 quarterbacks over him right now, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But do I think that in the right situation with a great defense?
Sure.
And there's been plenty of quarterbacks that won because their defense was great and they had a good running game.
Yeah.
And they just had to just manage the game, not make a lot of mistakes,
plus,
make a couple plays here and there.
In Jimmy G's defense, I mean, what are we talking about? 19 games where he's been the starting quarterback in San Francisco.
Right.
And he obviously didn't start very many games in New England. So we're talking about a guy who, relatively speaking, a guy, relatively speaking, who still doesn't have that much experience in the NFL. I don't know. I thought it was just an interesting argument that is he the thing holding them back? You know, and it's an interesting argument, especially now, given that the Cardinals are getting ready to play him again for the second time. Could the 49ers achieve an even greater level than where they are right now
put
if they had
way.
Somebody better than Jimmy G, a quarterback?
There's a lot of quarterbacks over the years, from Andy Dalton to Ryan Tannehill to many others, where you can't win a Super Bowl with that guy. Like, you got to get rid of that guy. You're not going to go anywhere with him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not there with Garoppolo. I wouldn't say that about Garoppolo. I wouldn't put him in the Andy Dalton, Ryan Fitzpatrick category.
Matthew Stafford
category.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of quarterbacks we could look at and say, I don't believe that guy can win a Super Bowl. No matter how good their defense is, how good their running game is, I don't think he could win. I think Garoppolo could help that team win, but the defense and the running game have to be good.
WWE 2K20. It's available now for Xbox One and PS4. We're giving you the chance to win a copy. Head to the rewards page at ArizonaSports.com for your chance to win. WWE 2K20 is rated T14. The Phoenix Suns will see a familiar face tonight when they face the Hawks, and the resurgence of this former Phoenix player is being credited to a current Phoenix player, Aaron Baines. We'll explain why he's getting all the love next on the Burns and Gambo Show.